Little Foxes by Michael Mopurgo. Chapter 6. That afternoon, after school, Billy ran home and took 3 tins of corned beef off the shelf and just hoped he'd be able to replace them before Auntie May noticed. He took particular care no one was watching him when he crawled under the wire into the wilderness. The fox cubs were ravenous, snarling and snapping at each other as they waited for the tins to be opened, and then they attacked the corned beef ferociously. When they had finished, not a shred was left on the grass. In their anxiety to drink the milk, they stood on the edges of the bowls and upset them, sending the milk soaking into the ground. Twice more he had to fill them up from the canal and mix up the milk powder before they were satisfied. And then when Billy lay down, they spread themselves all over him and cleaned themselves, each other and Billy, minutely. "You sillies," said Billy. "Why did you have to come out and show yourselves like that? I'd have brought the food. I'd have found it somewhere. I told you, didn't I? Have I ever let you down yet? Well, have I? Now they know where you are, I have got to move you. That's what your mother would do, but I don't know where I can move you to. There's nowhere else around here for foxes except the wilderness. Can hardly take you home, can I? You must never, never come out again. They're nasty out there. Do you understand? Nasty. They'd shoot you soon as look at you." And one of them, the one with the whitest muzzle, sat down on his face as if to stop him talking. "I'm beginning to think Auntie May's right, you know. You do smell something rotten. Can't see how, because you wash yourselves every 5 minutes. Still, spec you think I smell pretty funny. Wonder what we do smell like, people, I mean." He stayed longer than ever that evening. He didn't want to leave them alone at all. And when he did have to leave them at last, he turned to give them a final warning, wagging his finger at them. "You remember what I said now," he said. "Stay here. Stay here and be good, and I'll be back tomorrow sometime. Corned beef, I promise. Don't know how, but corned beef it'll be. But don't you move out of the wilderness. You understand?" But the fox cubs were all busy washing themselves and hardly gave him a glance as he left them. Billy could not sleep that night. He lay on his back, hands under his head, and tried to think. But his thoughts were forever being interrupted by the rumble and roar of traffic from the motorway, by yowling cats or by Auntie May turning over in her squeaking bed and coughing her dry smoker's cough. It was the first warm night of the summer, and Billy discarded his blankets one by one until he was left only with his sheet. Even then he could not sleep. By morning he had still not worked out how he was going to find enough corned beef to feed his foxes. Neither had he managed to think of a place where it would be safe enough to hide the cubs. But move them he knew he must, and quickly. He survived school that day only because Auntie May had unwittingly solved the problem of the corned beef for him. At breakfast she handed over his dinner money for the week. It wouldn't be stealing, he thought, as he joined the cavalcade of children walking to school. It wasn't as if he was taking from her any more than usual. He would spend it all on corned beef and go without school dinners for the week. Just tell them at school that he would be going home for dinner. No one would know. Lots of children did it after all. Throughout the dinner break, there was a line of fox watchers by the school fence, binoculars at the ready. But when after an hour nothing appeared, they soon gave up. And by the time the bell went for afternoon lessons, Billy found he was one of only a few left at the fence, and he did not for one moment take his eye from the spot where the foxes had appeared the day before. He longed to run over to the wilderness, crawl under the wire, and be with them to reassure them. More than once, he thought he spotted some unnatural movement in the underground beyond the wire, and held his breath, fully expecting them to come out into the open. Forehead pressed against the school fence, he willed them to stay hidden. And they did. The appearance of the fox cubs was still the buzz of the school. There was talk of clandestine expeditions into the wilderness to find them, talk of setting the dogs upon them, and this only served to convince Billy that he had to act fast if he was to save them. And by the time school finished that afternoon, he still did not know what could be done. On the way home for tea, he stopped at the shops to buy as much corned beef as his dinner money would allow. That problem, at any rate, he had solved, at least for the time being. He was into his second helping of baked beans and had scraped away all the beans off the toast, as he always did, when Auntie May took the cigarette out of her lips, took the cosy off the teapot and poured herself a cup of tea. She sat down opposite him and flicked the ash off her cigarette into the ashtray. "Did you hear about those fox cubs, Billy?" she asked suddenly. But she did not wait for an answer. Four of them there was. That's what my friend Ivy told me. You know Ivy at number 38. And she said Mrs. Bootle told her, and she's on the committee, so she ought to know, shouldn't she? Well, someone spotted one of them a few days ago, just down by that old ruin. Just outside the fence it was. You know the place, Billy? And then yesterday there was three of them seen from the school. Children came home full of it, Ivy said. You didn't see them, Billy, did you? Don't suppose you did? Didn't say anything about it, did you? Well, anyway, Mrs. Bootle wasn't going to have it. Vermin are vermin, like she says. And when they grow up, they only breed, don't they? And they're into dustbins all the time, spreading litter and disease. And Ivy says she knows her tabby cat was eaten by a fox last year. Couldn't have been anything else, she says. And like Mrs. Bootle says, they're a danger to health. I mean, did you smell that dead fox a few weeks back? And she saw they've been known to attack children in their prams when they're hungry enough. And they don't wash, you know. They don't ever wash. Well, they wouldn't, would they? Anyway, Mrs. Bootle, she's chairman of the committee now, you know. Well, she wasn't having it, like I said. She rang up the pest control people last night, and they came quick as lightning first thing this morning. Not surprising, really. Been a lot of complaints about vermin on the estate. What's the matter, Billy? Don't you like your baked beans? Told me you could eat like a horse. Something the matter with you? You eat up, there's a good boy. Like I was saying, they went in and gassed them just like that. Good thing too, I should say. Met Mrs. Cole at the supermarket, and her husband, that works on the council, he was there. He was one of them that did it. You won't ever go near that place, will you, Billy? Mrs. Cole told me. She said there's been strange goings on in there, you know, like rituals, witches and that. She said they found a cross of twigs stuck into the ground, and a fresh grave with flowers on it. Don't you ever go near that place, Billy, do you hear? Come on now, Billy, eat your baked beans. I opened a big tin, and you said you'd eat it. It's not right to waste things, Billy. I'm not made of money, you know. How many did you say they found? Billy asked, blinking back the tears that threatened to engulf him, wiping them away from the corners of his eyes. One cross is quite enough, Billy, she said, stubbing out her cigarette. People get up to all sorts in places like that. Black magic, voodoo, you keep away, like I said. Foxes, said Billy patiently. How many foxes did they find? Oh, I don't know. I think it was four. Do wish you'd stop playing with those beans and eat up, Billy. They'll be all cold if you leave them much longer. No, perhaps it was three they killed. Maybe it was four. I don't know. Three, four. What's the difference? Anyway, Mrs. Cole said they'd be going back in to flush out any more if there are any. Are you crying, Billy? Are you all right, dear? Oh, Billy, there's no need for that. You don't have to eat the baked beans if you don't want to. I can keep them back for tomorrow. There's no need to cry, Billy. Billy wept silently, his tears falling from his cheeks onto his baked beans. All this fuss over beans, Billy, said Auntie May. I've never known you cry before, and now this, and all because of baked beans. You'll spoil them, Billy. I don't understand you at all, Billy. I've never understood you. I don't like to see boys who cry, Billy. You're a big boy now. Crying's for babies, Billy, not big boys. You go and lie down on your bed till you feel better. There's a good boy. Billy threw himself face down onto his bed and buried his face in his pillow. He had to bite on his knuckles to hold back the scream of anguish that threatened to burst from him. He was consumed with a terrible grief at the loss of his family and the raging anger at the ignorance and cruelty that had killed them. And as he lay there, he could find only one vestige of hope remaining, the possibility that there could be one of them still left alive. Auntie May had not been sure whether it was three or four. He clung desperately to that hope, took his grey feather out from under his pillow and willed it to be three. When Auntie May came in later on, he pretended to be asleep, breathing deeply as she covered him with the blanket. He waited until she had gone to bed and the light in the passage had been switched off before slipping out of the flat. It was one of those rare summer nights when the white light of the moon was strong enough to all but eliminate the omnipotent glare of the street lamps. Billy ran down across the estate towards the wilderness, his grey feather in his pocket. He ran all the way there, half hoping, half dreading what he would find. And once in the wilderness, he moved silently through the graveyard and into the ruined chapel itself, and a sound of his own panting filled the room as he sat down on the mound and waited. There was destruction all around him. All the entrances to the den had been caved in, and great mounds of fresh earth covered each one. He put his ear to the ground and listened, and he could hear nothing but his own heartbeat and his own frantic breathing, and he lay there for some time, hoping and praying that one of them might have survived the gassing. But as time passed and he heard nothing, he feared the worst, but refused to believe it. It took several minutes of frantic digging to clear away enough earth from one of the holes so that he could call down into the den. "It's me! It's Billy! You can come out now! It's me! It's Billy!" But there was no answering movement from inside. The earth, no sound at all. Time after time, Billy's hopes were raised, only to be dashed again. There was a sudden rustling in the underground that turned out to be a small hedgehog shuffling through the leaves. Then a noisy commotion on the canal when something alarmed the ducks and sent them quacking into the air. And Billy reached the canal in time to see a big fish jump. A marauding pike, he thought. Billy searched his wilderness from end to end. He called down every rabbit hole. He even climbed the walls of the ruined chapel to check any window ledge where a fox might be lying up. It was all for nothing. Towards dawn, he found himself wandering disconsolately towards the canal bank, where he sat down and at last accepted that all his foxes had been taken from him, that none of them had survived. The great white moon shone up at him from the water, and he threw a stone at it angrily to stop it staring at him. It shattered into a million jewels before piercing itself together once again. He had no tears left now. Exhausted and drained of all care, Billy lay down and slept. The swan came out of the reeds, gliding across the water, and looked on as the boy slept. In his sleep, Billy dreamed she was there, and he smiled.